Guys, okay, if we get the extension cord, I'll move. For the meantime, whatever. You'll survive this way. Okay, so what we're doing is, this is a topic the guys in my share, we've touched on it. This touches on issues in Shemitah, but it's a standalone. We're going to do it for 2 days, okay? What we're going to try to do is understand the nature of Kedushat Ha'aretz, specifically as it relates to a phrase that appears in the Gemara in several places, Kedusha Rishonah and Kedusha Shni'ah. Right? There were multiple stages of the sanctification of Israel, and the Gemara has disputes in different places about whether or not... Yeah, look at that. Yeah, who knew we had that?
I believe this is the school. We have one also. Everybody knows where it is.
There you go. Right, so the Gemara has a dispute in several places about whether the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and in different places Yerushalayim still is intact or not. And this has a lot of implications in Halacha. One of them possibly is the question of whether Shemitah nowadays is biblical or not, which is the topic my shir is doing. I know Shmuel David's shir did this. Shmuel David's shir, yeah? Yeah? You guys do this? Where are you guys? Didn't you do this? Right? The question of whether Shemitah nowadays is d'oraita d'rabbanan, the majority view being, what's the majority view of poskim? That it is not d'oraita. Whether it's even d'rabbanan is yet a further machloket, where the Ramah actually poskins it is not. It is only poskims like the Ravid, that is a midat chasidut to keep Shemitah as man as that. But what I want to focus on is specifically even more, not just Kedusha Aretz and Kedusha Rishonah and Shniyah, but the position of the Rambam within that. So let's get a little bit into the sugya. So the Gemara in several places touches on this topic. We'll start though with the sugya in Yevamot. Okay? So the Gemara in Yevamot asks whether Truma nowadays is biblical. Right? And it asserts that according to Rabbi Yochanan, it is. Okay, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it is. And then the Gemara challenges that. On what basis does the Gemara challenge that? Who got through? I know a lot of you are not feeling well. I got that. Right? So what does the Gemara say? Right? Why would you not think it's d'oraita? V'atan yishtei kupot. If you have two boxes, achat shel chulin v'achat shel truma, one of not sanctified produce and one of sanctified produce of truma, v'lefneim shtei sa'in, achat shel chulin v'achat shel truma, and then two measurements, v'naflu elu l'betoch elu, and then they get mixed together, harei elu mutarim. They are permitted. Sha'ani omer truma l'toch truma nafla, v'chulin b'toch chulin naflu. So we imagine, right, what's the problem here? We have two boxes, right? Two boxes, one of truma, one of not truma, and then two smaller containers, one of truma and not truma, right? Now what happens? If... Now these containers fell in, but we don't know which fell into which, okay? Yeah, it's a little bit confusing, but fine. What would happen if the chulin fell into the truma and the truma fell into the chulin? Then everything would be... Then everything would be what? Would be dimua. Would be, right, dimua is what happens when truma and chulin are mixed, and that would be forbidden to a non-kohen. Right? So what do we do in this case? We say that we don't know. We know which of the big boxes is truma and which is not. We don't know which of the small containers is. So what do? We imagine that the truma fell into the truma and the chulin fell into the chulin, which means that the truma, which was already truma, is just more truma. The chulin, which was already chulin, remains chulin, and therefore the kohanim can eat the truma, and then the chulin can be eaten by non-kohanim. The assumption of the Gemara, the Gemara then asks, okay, is that only if the majority is truma? Why does that matter? Because if the majority is truma, then fell into the wrong one, what would happen? Midoraita, it would be batel. Right? It would be batel. Right? And therefore, if a minority truma fell into majority chulin, then midoraita is batel. Midorabanan is not batel because truma has a much higher standard. Right? But at least midoraita would be batel. But if it's, let's say it's not majority, right? Let's say it's not majority. So then, what would be the only legitimate reason to, right? So now, if it was batel, so then we could say, listen, the fact that it's batel midoraita means that it's not truma anyways. The fact that it is that it could be that the Truma fell into Chulin. So once we're dealing with the Darabanan, we can imagine that it's the Truma fell into Truma, the Chulin fell into the Chulin. So Reish Lakish says, Vusharabu Chulin ala Truma, you're only allowed to do this whole imagining thing if, anyways, it would be Batil. Okay? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afa Vishalo Rabbi Chulin ala Truma. Rabbi Yochanan says no, even if it's not majority. So the Gemara says, why? How could that be? Why would Rabbi Yochanan say that we imagine, right? There's no particular logical reason to say that we imagine that the Truma fell into the Truma, the Chulin fell into the Truma, right, into the Chulin. What are the statistical chances that the Chulin fell into the Chulin and the Truma fell into the Truma? What? Right? No. Well, no, it's 50%. And it's exactly 50%. It's pure, right? It's 50-50, right? There's two boxes, right, and two containers, and the two containers fell into the two boxes. At this point, it's exactly equal, right? So why would you be makil? So the Gemara says, okay, I understand, according to Reish Lakish, that as it is, the potential truma would be batel. Fine. Can you just wait for lunch or make it? Come on. No. No, no, no. Go do that in the kitchen. Come on. No, no, no. So, that no, no. You can get jelly every... Ugh. You can hear from there, and then you'll come and eat your sandwich. Fine. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand Reish Lakish, it needs to be batel, but what about according to Rabbi Yochanan? What does the Gemara say? So Rabbi Yochanan, he says, it doesn't matter. Why? Because, right? Because maybe Rabbi Yochanan would hold that Truma nowadays is Dirabana. Okay? The Truma nowadays is Dirabana. And if Truma nowadays is Dirabanan, then we can do this imagining thing, because the whole halacha is Dirabanan to begin with. So the Gemara says, Amani Rabbanani, Vana Damri Kirp Yosi, Titani Besider, Olam, Asher Yarshua, Odeha Virishta, Yerusha, Nia Yeshlan, Ushlishit, Ein Lohen. And the Gemara says, okay. So the position in this right that it says that we can do this imagining thing, right? That we just assume that the Truma container fell into the Truma and the Chulin fell into the Chulin, that goes according to the position that Truma is Dirabanan. And then the Gemara says, and this goes against the position of Rabbi Yossi, who says that Truma is Daraita. Now, why in this Gemara does the Gemara say that Truma is Darabanan Daraita? What does it hang on? Right? What is the determining factors? The Gemara says, Kedusha Rishona, right? Kedusha Shniya, is it Batel or not? So what does that mean? Okay, so this is what we're going to try to figure out in the next 2 days. Okay? There's, as I talked about in my shir, there's always two questions you have to ask if you want to figure out whether a particular mitzvah tluya ba'aretz applies nowadays. Right? One is the universal question, which is, do any mitzvah tluya ba'aretz apply? Is there kedusha in the land such that the mitzvah should apply? The second question you have to ask is there a local reason to this mitzvah why it would not apply? Okay, this Gemara in Yevamot assumes that, which one? If truma nowadays is daraita or not, hangs on a general, a universal rule, or a local rule?
General?
Yeah, a universal rule. Namely, the question of whether Eretz Yisrael, for these purposes, is kadosh. Right? It's holy. And the Gemara says there's a machloket. Everyone agrees that kedusha rishona, the first sanctification of Israel, is batel. The machloket is about kedusha shniya. Rabbi Yossi in Seder Olam Rabbah holds that Kedusha Rishona is Batel, but Kedusha Shniya is not Batel, and therefore the land is Kadosh, and therefore Truma continues to apply. And the Chachamim hold that Kedusha Rishona is Batel, and Kedusha Shniya is Batel. And therefore, in order for the land to be holy, for the purpose of Truma and Maaser at least, in the time of Mashiach, we'll have to sanctify it a third time. Okay, that's the machloket that we want to deal with. Okay? And like I said, it has implication, potential implications for Truma, it has potential implications for Shemitah, right? What we want to try to understand is, what are these Kedushot, right? What is Kedusha Rishona? What is Kedusha Shniya? And why is Kedusha Shniya different? Okay? Right? In what way is Kedusha Rishona different from Kedusha Shniya, such that Kedusha Shniya might be not Batel when Kedusha Rishona is, right? That's the question we want to answer. Okay, first, as for the facts, what is Kedusha Rishona and what is Kedusha Shniya? Let's see how it goes. You did Makara. What? Okay, so right, so Rashi holds that Kedusha Rishona, this is source two. Rashi holds Kedusha Rishona is Yoshua. Right? Okay? I know that you guys are, I can't make fun of you not knowing Tanakh, because you're all, like, more than half of you are trying, so I respect it. Okay, fine. But we'll see what you know anyways. Fine? So, this the beginning of Yeshua, at least you should know, right? But as you know, the Torah ends, we open up, as soon as the Torah ends, right? We finish reading it on Simchat Torah, and then we immediately go into the, well, Maftir, but after Maftir, we go to Haftarah, and the Haftarah is the first parak of Yoshua, right? Yoshua is the one who brings them into the land. Moshe does not. Yoshua conquers the land. It takes how long? According to Chazal, 14 years. Sheva Shekivshu v'sheva Shechilku, right? 7 years for a conquest and 7 years to divide it. That, according to Rashi, is Kedushat Rishona. When does that sanctification end, according to the position that Kedusha Rishona is Batel, which is everybody, right? When does Kedusha Rishona end? What? So when do the people leave, right? When does this conquest cease to be effective? In two major stages, right? What are the two main stages? What? So the tribes separate when? Okay, let's do a little Jewish history here, okay? Fine. Yoshua is followed by, right, this Canaan in his time, right? The next major period is that of the Shoftim, which goes for several hundred years. It's not clear exactly how many years because, right, some counts assume that the Shoftim don't overlap. Some assume they do overlap, so you can't necessarily add up the years in Shoftim, right? Then you have then after several hundred years, however many years it is, right? Again, in Seder Olam, it assumes it's consecutive, so 400 some odd years, 480, I think. Right, then you get to the first king. Who's the first king? Shaul. Second king? Ishbosheth for 2 years. Right? Right? And then David. Right? Then David's son. David is wonderful. Despite all of his mistakes, God loves him. Right? Then he has a son, Shlomo. Shlomo is good at the beginning, and then Shlomo marries Bat Paro and 1,999 other wives and many of the other nations, and according to Pshat and the Pesukim, he worships Avodah Zarah, according to, right? But whatever it is, yes, okay? As punishment for Shlomo and for, right, the Malchut splits under his son. His son is Rechavam, right? Is Rechavam. He takes Malchut Yehuda, which ends up being Yehuda and Binyamin. Maybe a little bit more, not totally clear, right? Levi. And the northern kingdom goes under Yeravam bin Nevat. Okay, the southern kingdom, Malchut Yehuda, goes for several hundred years. It's always ben achar ben. It's always sons of the Davidic dynasty, right? Sometimes brothers, right? But everyone is from the Davidic dynasty, as opposed to in Malchut Yisrael, where you got, right, Yeravam and his son, but then you, right, then there's a rebellion, he's killed and he's punished, and then you do this like 20 times, right, until the end of the book. Okay, Malchut Yisrael is almost completely sent into Galut, much earlier than Malchut Yehuda, because of what world superpower? The Assyrians, Ashur, right? And I've mentioned this to you guys. You should go at least one point in your life. Go to London, go to the British Museum, and you can look, go to the Assyrian wing. When you go to the Assyrian wing, you will understand the Tanakh much better. First read Tanakh, then go to the museum, right? Right, when you get there, you'll understand, right? Assyria, it wasn't so long that they were a superpower, but when they were the most arrogant superpower in the universe, right? And when I went to the British Museum, they had a second visiting exhibit of Assyria. So there was the main Assyrian exhibit and the library, but it had a big tablet, whatever, from the time of Assyria, from Ashurbanipal, which says, right, and this was the name of the exhibit, "I am Ashurbanipal, king of the world." Right, that is how they described themselves. Right, they were right, and we know this. Right, Sancheiriv explicitly tells Hezekiahu, right, "Do you think God can save you? None of the other gods saved me, right? I am king of the world." That's what he says, right? This is how the Assyrians view themselves, okay? So, Malchut Yisrael ends up being exiled before Malchut Yehuda, the 10 tribes, right? The 10 lost tribes, you've probably heard of them. This is what happens, right? Under the reign of what king? No. You're wrong kingdom, wrong. Nope, Sancheiriv is the one who fights Malchut Yehuda. Right kingdom, Tiglat-Pileser. Tiglat Pilneser. It's under the king of, right? Okay. Then you get Yehuda, right? Yehuda lasts longer. Yehuda also, as Yotam notes, ends up in a fight with Assyria. That's under Sancheiriv, right? That's under Sancheiriv, right? Where Sancheiriv also conquers much of Yehuda, right? But not Yerushalayim in the miraculous battle, right? Of Yerushalayim, right? That's where, right? He's threatening him and then he wakes up, right? Chizkiyahu davens, God performs a miracle, sends an angel, and overnight 185,000 people are killed, right? They just die, right? And as I've mentioned to some of you, Lord Byron wrote a very famous poem in the Romantic period about this. You can read later, describing the victory of Chizkiyahu over Sancheiriv. But fundamentally, Yehuda survives the onslaught of Assyria, and coming back to what David said, they get conquered by what kingdom? Babylonians, under what king? Now Nebuchadnezzar, thank you. Right now Nebuchadnezzar, under his miserable generals, right, or the Rav HaTabachim, right, the chief slaughterer, whose name was Nebuzaradan. Okay, fine, they go into Galut, and as Yirmiyahu tells them, that Galut is going to last
70 years,
or at least 70 years, not totally clear, but 70 years, okay? At the end of that period, the Jews begin to return because of what historic event? Persia conquers, right? In that 7 years, Persia becomes the world power, right? Remember, this is the age of empires, okay? I mentioned to some of you, I think, right, you have to understand this is the age of empires. As one of my rabbis once pointed out to me, right, the appellation that we give to God, Melech Malchei Hamlachim, right, that's a very weird thing. Why would you say that God is the king of king of kings, right? So no, that would just be the king of kings, right? Melech Hamlachim. What's Melech Malchei Hamlachim? Because he's the king of emperors, right? He's, because remember, he has to take, right? There's a battle against Sancheiriv who thinks he's the king of kings, right? So God has to say, no, I'm above you. So saying he's the king of kings doesn't help. He says, I'm the king of kings, meaning I'm the king of emperors, right? That the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Persians, right, are giving to themselves. They are the king of kings because they have so many kingdoms. They don't necessarily depose the local kings. They make puppet governments, right? So they're the king of kings, right? So God is the king of kings, okay? Fine. So in that 70-year period, right, Assyria is already gone. They've been conquered by Babylonia. Babylonia is conquered in turn by Persia, and a new strategy emerges under the king of Persia, known as Cyrus the Great, right? It's Cyrus the Great. So, Sefer Ezra opens up with what is known as Hatzarat Koresh, Cyrus's declaration, which, for the record, we have Cyrus's declaration. It is preserved. It's at the British Museum, right? In the Cyrus cylinder, right? With a slight change from Tanakh. How does Hatzarat Koresh go? What does Cyrus say? He says, yes, Ellie?
Because
God told him that he wants everyone to go home and to build their, right, temples. That's what God told him. In the Cyrus cylinder, that is exactly what Cyrus says with one change. It does not say Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei. It does not say God's name. It says Marduk, right? Because Marduk told me, right? The chief god of the Persian pantheon. Okay, fine. That's Tanakh's little change. Obviously, there's theological reasons for that. Cyrus sends everybody back. Okay, good. Cyrus sends everybody back. Who is the leader of the Jews who goes back? There are two leaders, slightly different in time, right? Because there's multiple stages to this. Who's the religious leader is?
Ezra.
The political leader is? Nehemiah. Right? Right. Again, a little bit different. So they go and they rebuild. How many people go with him? Not so many. The answer is not so many. Right? Not so many people go back with Ezra. Right? And most of the people who do go are the bottom of the society. They're intermarried, they're mamzerim, they're, right? Literally, they're, right? The fourth parak of Kiddushin, Asur Yuchsin, goes through, right? It goes so far as to say that what is the Gemara saying, Asur Yuchsin, that what is better in terms of Yichlus, Eretz Yisrael or Bavel? Bavel, because all the people who are Miyuchas stayed in Bavel and all the dregs of society went back with Ezra and Nehemiah to Eretz Yisrael, okay? But in the meantime, he goes back, they rebuild Yerushalayim, right? They rebuild society, there's some stops because they fight with the locals, right? Okay, it's restarted under Darius, under Dariavesh. after Dariavesh, one of them, there are many Dariuses, and they're whatever, we don't even know which one, right? After one of the Dariuses, they finally finish building the Beit HaMikdash. Yes? Good. That's Ezra. Okay. According to Rashi, that is Kedusha Shniyah. Kedusha Rishonah is Yehoshua. Kedusha Shniyah is this period much later. Okay? That is the last historical event that is in Tanakh, is Shivat Zion, right? Which is described in Sefer Ezra, described in Haggai, right? Okay? Malachi, those are the end. That's the end of Tanakh. Okay? Good. That is the majority position in Rishonim. Kedusha Rishonah is Kedusha Yehoshua, which was Batel. Kedusha Shniyah is the Machloket, the Kedusha of Ezra. There is another position here. That is the position of Rabbi Hananel, which Tosfot quotes. Okay? And that is, right, he writes, look at number three. Tosfot says, Peirush Rabbeinu Hananel, Rishona, what is the first Kedusha? Yerushat, Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. Right, Kedusha Rishona is Kedusha of the Avot. Shni'ah, Yerushat, Yoshua. The second is Yoshua, meaning, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, what, for all practical purposes, there is no machloket. Everyone agrees. Right, that Yoshua is forever. Right, the only question is about the Avot, but that's, you know. But Ezra Bichlal, right, Ezra presumably is Kayam, according to everybody, or something like that. Okay? And that Tosfot says, V'lo yitachen lefarishken. That's just obviously wrong, because you go through all the sugyot and it's very clear that, for example, the Gemara Nivamot, sorry, the Gemara Nida, makes it very clear that the second Kedusha is Ezra, right? This is the standard view, but you should know that that position exists. But Rabbeinu Hananel thinks that Kedusha Shniyah is Yoshua, Kedusha Rishona is Kedusha of the Avot. Now, to be fair, logically, Rabbeinu Hananel makes a lot of sense, right? What's the appeal to Rabbeinu Hananel logically? Right, meaning basically his logic is as follows. The Avot didn't come as a nation, so they didn't make, so that Kedusha was temporary, right? But once Yeshua comes in, they came in as a nation, okay? There's another reason. And this is the major question we're going to have to answer, which is, okay, why is Kedusha Shniyah have more more staying power than Kedusha Rishonah? So according to Rabbeinu Hananel, there's an easy answer, which is, Kedusha Rishonah is on the Avot, that was like temporary, is a bunch of people, they didn't have the whole land, they went into Galut for 400 years, God promised they would come back later anyways, this wasn't the permanent time, right? That makes a lot of sense. But Yoshua, right, if I had to ask you to guess which Kedusha has more staying power, Kedusha Yoshua, Kedusha Ezra, knowing the history that I just told you, Yoshua came in victoriously, right? Remember, he has a miraculous victory of Yericho. They conquer the country. There's peace for hundreds of years. It's followed by a monarchy, right? It sets in motion, right? That's Kedusha Rishona. Or that's Kedusha Yoshua, rather, right? Ezra, a bunch of mamzerim who don't really fit in Bavel, come, and they sort of come under the auspices of a foreign dictator, right, of Cyrus, and they come, and then they get there, and it doesn't really work very well, and it's put on pause, there's someone in them more important than, or more powerful than them, and eventually Darius helps them, and then, yes, this wonderful, very, very strong, intermarried mamzerim, right, an eclectic group of whatever, the dregs of society show up in Israel and sort of have a quasi-successful return to Israel with a Beit HaMikdash. And how successful is the Beit HaMikdash? Hashniyah? Wonderfully. So successful such that Ezra says, what is the reaction of the building the second Beit HaMikdash? Well, no, let's be precise. There's rejoicing, there's singing and crying at the same time. Who's singing, who's crying? Very good. The people who'd never seen the first Beit HaMikdash are singing because, hey, it's great. And the people who are old enough to remember the first Beit HaMikdash are weeping because they said, ugh, this is pathetic. Right? Ezra's Yerusha is like, if I had to guess which one had more staying power, Yoshua or Ezra, I would have gone with Yoshua. So Rabbeinu Hananel solves the problem by saying, yes, Kedusha of the Avot, whatever, right? That was temporary and had to wait for the Jews to come. But then when Yoshua comes victorious, Kedusha Shniyah, right? But the way majority of Rishonim understand it, which is that no. Kiddusha Rishonah is Yehoshua. And that, well, you know, once Nebuchadnezzar gets rid of everyone, Ashur gets rid of everyone, it's not Kadosh anymore. But Ezra, oh, yes, the idyllic return of Shivat Zion of Ezra. That's what we want to commemorate. Right? That's the one that's holy forever. That's, at first glance, I mean, it's very odd. Right? It's very odd. Now, that historical background is not what Tosfot says. Tosfot just knows that the Gemaras don't imply it. Right? The Gemaras imply that the simple understanding is Kedusha Rishona is Yehoshua, Kedusha Shniya is Ezra. Okay? So we continue in Tosfot. Tosfot says, Od Sha'al Rav Shmuel Me Aniyov Etri. Tahacha Kai Rabbi Yochan Kerbi Yosi Dirusha Rishona Ushniya Yeshlem Kedusha Rishona. Yeshlehem, the Kedusha Rishona Lo Kicha Ladid Lavo. Uperek Ashochet Vamale, Kamershas Rabbi Yochan Kedusha La'atid, the Kicha La'atid. There's another problem, which is that according to the Gemara, here Rabbi Yochanan thinks that Kedusha Shniya is not Kadosh. However, in Zvachim, he says it is Kadosh, right? So it's not only that it doesn't really make sense, it's also self-contradictory. So the Ri said, Ma'asrot vaday lo kidsha aretz latid, aval kedushat Yerushalayim v'habayit kidsha. Shekedushat mechitzot kaima kol shah. So what does Tosfot answer? Tosfot says, if the sugya wasn't confusing enough, there are two sugyot that have the same words in them, but they mean opposite things. Sometimes the Gemara, when it's talking about Kedusha Rishonah, is talking about Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes it's talking about Kedushat Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim. And the Gemara, so Tosfot says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Yerushalayim had two Kedushot. Yerushalayim, everyone agrees, Kidsha L'Sha'atah V'Kidsha L'Atid Lavo. Its sanctity never waned. The machloket is about Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yochanan paskens Kedushat Yerushalayim, Kidshat Latid Lavo, and Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, Lo Kidshat Latid Lavo. So now we have two major questions. Assuming we don't pass on Rabbi Yochanan, we have two questions. One, why was Kedushat Ezra more sticky than Kedushat Yehoshua? The second is, why is Kedushat Yerushalayim stickier than Kedushat Eretz Yisrael? Right? Those are the two major questions that we have to answer in the sugya. They may be related. They may not be related, as we'll see. Okay? But those are the two questions that we have to answer. Okay? Another question, right? This is question 2B, is, okay, let's assume, the Gemara seems to assume that Kedusha Shnia, if it's Batel, it's Batel nowadays. So Truma is not Delrita nowadays. However, what about in the time of Bayit Sheni? In the time of Bayit Sheni was... Or does anyone have a machloket about that? Right? Meaning, is the machloket whether Kedushat Ezra had any effect? Or is the machloket whether Kedushat Ezra is permanent or can also wane when you go into Galut, just like the first Kedusha? Well, maybe. Right? Now, Tosfot says no. Right? Tosfot says, if you look six lines on the bottom, Omer read, Ein yiresh shum chacham yomash kedusha aretz bizman bayit sheni lemaasrod, chom mitzvot atlud baretz haitami derabanan. No one held that, like beer, right? No. Kedushat Ezra, worst comes to worst, is like Kedushat Yehoshua, that it brings Kedusha to the land for the purpose of mitzvot atlud baretz while you still dwell in the land, and then it can go away when you don't, right? But no one holds that when the Beit HaMikdash was standing, that it was not Kadosh. That's not the only Shita. Well, I had a 50-50 chance there. And if you guys are more interested, we're not going to spend too much time on it, but I did mention that the sugya we will look at here in the Yerushalmi Shvi'it. So if you look on, they have a footnote which will give you at least a decent summary of this. At least they do in the Hebrew. I have to look whether they do in the English. What? Let me just see if they put a footnote here, and I can tell you which one to look at. Right. I mean, I have the Hebrew one, so I just got to figure out. Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Yes, there is a summary of some of these positions in on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Footnote, in the English, it's footnote 8. And in the interpretive variants, A and B. Okay, A and B. Yeah, okay? We're going to come to it in the Yerushalmi, but if you want to look at some of those sources, you can look at it. Fine. Okay. Now, it's not just that the Gemara in Chagiga clarifies that this question of whether Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia, whether they're Kadosh, it's not just a question of when did it become Kadosh, but there's also another implication of this, which is, what does the Gemara in Chagiga say? That there were also cities that were not conquered in the second Kedusha. Right? Meaning, it also has geographic implications. Because it's not just that it's the same land. Right? So if you look at number 4, the Gemara in Chagiga says, Bacha Rabbi Lazar v'amar. Rabbi Lazar cried and said, Sod Hashem l'riyavu v'rito loho di'am. God's secret is to those who fear him, and he made known his covenant. Amar lo lechem or lehem. Tell them. Alta choshel l'minyanchem. Don't worry about your counts. Kach mikublane v'yochanam and Zakkai sheshama mirabo v'rabo mirabo. I heard from Yochanam and Zakkai, who heard from his rabbi. Hilchot al Moshe Misina. Going back to Moshe. Amon and Moav ma'asrin ma'aser ani b'shvi'it. That Amon and Moav, the lands of Amon and Moav, do not have Kedusha such that they have partial Kedusha. Right? Shemitah doesn't apply to them, but they have enough Kedusha that you have to give Trumot and Masrot. So which Truma and Maaser do you give during the year of Shemitah? Maaser Ani. Okay? Ma Ta'am, the Gemara says, why? Because Harbe Krachim Kafshu Olei Mitzrayim Velo Kafshum Olei Bavel. There are many cities that were conquered in the time of Mitzrayim, meaning Yoshua, and not Olei Bavel. Mipnei Shekudusha Rishonah Kichal Shata Velo Kichal Atid Lavo V'inichum Kedei Sheyismechu Aleihen Aniyim B'Shvi'it. And the second Kedusha, they didn't sanctify them. But now the Gemara says something very weird. Why did Ezra choose not to sanctify everything conquered by Yoshua? So that the poor could rely on the produce produced in that land during Shemitah. Meaning it wouldn't be Kadosh, but Kedusha Shvi'it. Now, that's a very weird Gemara. Why is that Gemara weird? So first of all, it indicates that there's a geographic difference between Kedusha Rishonah and Shniyah, between Yoshua and Ezra. But there's another important problem, which is, what does the Gemara here say about Kedusha Shniyah?
That it's real. It's instantiating Shemitah.
It's instantiating Shemitah, but not Truma and Maser. Because the lands of Amon and Moav have no Shemitah, but they have Truma and Maser, which means that according to the Gemara in Chagiga, it's possible that Kedusha Rishonah imbued one level of Kedusha, which is enough, possibly, for Truma and Maser, but not enough Kedusha for Shemitah. And the Gemara doesn't explain why that would be. Right? So now what questions do we have? First of all, what is Kedusha Rishonah Shniyah? We're going to assume like Rov Rishonim, it's Yoshua versus Ezra. Right? Second question is, okay, Is there a difference between Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, and if so, why? Third question, which is, why would Kedushat Ezra be stickier than Kedushat Yehoshua? And the fourth question now is, what does it mean, Lo Kidsha? Right? So Lo Kidsha can mean different things. It can either mean Lo Kidsha at all, it's not holy at all, or what can it mean? Right, it's not sufficiently holy, right? Meaning, it's holy, but not sufficiently holy for something, right? And then we'd have to ask, okay, what does it mean for something to have partial Kedusha? What would that mean? Okay? This partial Kedusha we see as well in Source 5 with Syria, right? Suria. Tanu Rabbanan, Bishlosha Drachim Shifta Suria L'Eretz Yisrael. Vishlosha L'Chutz La'aretz. There are three ways in which Syria is equivalent to Israel and three in which it's Chutz La'aretz. Now, Syria, when was Syria conquered? Was it conquered in Kedusha Rishona? No. Was it conquered in Kedusha Shnia? No. When was it conquered? In the middle. By who? By who? By David. By King David. This is what it says in Tanakh. Right? That David sent which general to conquer Syria?
Wasn't David during Kedusha
Rishona? Yes, but it's not the first sanctification. That's what we're going to get to in just 1 second. It's not Kedusha Yeshua, it's in the, right? It's David. And David sends what general? Yoav, very good. Right? And Ad Hayom, the Syrian community, is one of the, right, long, oldest communities that we have in the world. Right? When I was in YU, the head of the Sephardi education something, him and his wife, one of them was Egyptian, one was Syrian. Right? Whichever one was Syrian, they had Shtare Yuchsin, which we don't have. I mean, how many of you have Shtare Yuchsin? Like, no, your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather? So you're Sephardi. Yeah, good. Okay, good. Exactly. Are you Syrian? No. So he had Shtare Yuchsin tracing his family back 82 generations.
Wow.
To what point in history? To the period of Shlomo HaMelech. His family could trace his lineage back in Syria since the time of Shlomo, right? That was what he had, right? And there is a tradition in the Syrian community that at least one of the shuls there was established by Yoav, right? They have this tradition that one of the shuls is there. It's a very, very old community, okay? It is conquered by David. So it has three ways that is equivalent to Israel. Three, not. Afra tameh kechutz laretz. Its dirt is considered tameh, like chutz laretz. Hamocher avdo l'suria. If you sell your slave, you're not allowed to sell your slave out of Israel. And if you do, he goes free. So if you sell your slave to someone in Syria, it's like, but maybe get me Syria. And then there are certain implications in terms of getting that if you bring a get from Chutzlaretz, you have to say, you have to testify that it was signed and sealed before you. So it's Chutzlaretz. So it was Shloshel Eretz Israel, but there's three ways that it's like Eretz Israel. Chayavit b'maaser b'shvi'it, shmita and maaser. Keretz Yisrael, harotze likanes ba'le ta'ara nichnas. If you want to come in impurity, you can. Vakonis edeb esurik ekone piparvave Yerushalayim. And if you buy land there, it's like buying Yerushalayim, which the Gemara goes on to explain, is that you're allowed to be mechal shabbat midirabanan to effect the kinyan. Right? If that's the only way you're going to be able to buy it from a non-Jew, you're allowed to be mechal shabbat midirabanan. Okay? So, good. So this also, Surya is also a mid-level Kedusha. And the Gemara says, Chayavim Maaser B'Shvi'it Keretz Yisrael, K'savar Kibush Yachid Shmei Kibush. So now the Gemara says, why is it Chayavim Trumot and Maasrot? So what's the Gemara's answer? Kibush Yachid. Because there's another Machloket, which is, there's two types of Kibush. This was
Beer's question. Right?
Yonatan's question was, wait a second, isn't this a period of Kibush Rishon? The answer is, no. Because there's what's called Kibush Rabim, right, national kibush, and then there's kibush yachid, individual. And David's kibush was considered kibush yachid.
So whether Syria is kadosh or not
hangs on the question of whether an individual, even a king, his kibush is enough to be mekadesh the land. So now we have a few questions we have to add to our discussion. One is, what is this middle status? Right, we're not going to get too much into kibush yachid, but there's another question, which is, there's something else weird about this Gemara, which is, so that might actually be true. We'll see. But there's also a very important halachic question here, which is, Why is the Gemara asking whether David conquered it or not? It shouldn't matter. Why shouldn't it matter? What should matter? Whether Ezra conquered it.
Right,
because it historically it's before Kedusha Hashaniah. So if the Kedusha of Yoshua is Batel, then Kal v'chomer, the Kibush Yachid, which itself is a machloka, whether it has any power, should have been Batel. And yet the Gemara doesn't say that whether or not your Chayiv and Truma and Masoret in Syria depends on Ezra. It says it depends on David. Okay. So now, so Joseph, but wait a second. Maybe it becomes kadosh in some way, and just like we saw in Chagiga, that what? There is some sort of leftover kedusha of kedusha rishona. Even if you hold that it's batel, clearly it doesn't mean fully batel. The same thing might be true of kibush yachid, right? But this is another piece of evidence in that direction, right? Okay. Which brings us to, I think, the last Gemara for today, right? Gemara in Erechin. The Gemara in Erechin says as follows: My time of demand the Amar Kedusha Rishona Kitchale Sha'ata Velo Kitchale Etid Lavo. Why do we hold? Why do the people who hold that the first Kedusha is not Kadosh, the second one is Kadosh? Why do they hold that? Because the pasuk says, "Vayasu bnei agolah shavim min hashvi sukot, vayasu b'sukot ki lo asu mimei Yoshua ben Nun, kein bnei Yisrael, vati simcha gdola meod." So the Gemara says, "Well, it says in Ezra that Ezra came and he built sukot, which had never been done since the time of Yoshua." And the Gemara asks an obvious question, which is, "Efshar ba David lo asu sukot hashba Ezra?" I mean, David, Shlomo, you know. Hundreds of years between Yoshua, like that all doesn't exist. So Ela Makish bi'atam bimei Ezra leviatam bimei Yoshua. We compare the two returns to Israel of Yoshua and Ezra. Ma bi'atam bimei Yoshua manu shmitin v'yovlod v'kitshua rechoma. When Yoshua came, they counted Shemitah and Yovel, and they had to sanctify the cities. Af bi'atan bimei Ezra manushmitim yovlot v'kidshu arei choma, and they sanctified the cities. V'omer ve'aviacha Hashem Elokecha l'aretz asher Yeshua avotecha v'irishta, and it says that God will bring you to the land that your parents inherited. Makish Yerushatan Yerushat avotecha. Your Yerusha, meaning Yerusha of Ezra, is like the Yerusha of Yeshua. Ma Yerushat avotecha b'chidush kol advarim alalu. The Yerusha of Yoshua needed a renewed sanctification through all these processes that are listed there. Af Yerushatcha b'chidush kol advarim halalu. Ezra also needed to re-sanctify the land. And that is their evidence. Okay? So these are all the sugyot that we are going to put in play. There are others, right? Until we see the Yerushalmi. Okay? But now let me tell you what, right? Today we've mostly set up questions. Let me give you the one final question here, which is, the Rambam attempts to give an answer. I'm just going to read you the Rambam, and your job tomorrow is to try to answer these questions, specifically the Rambam. The Rambam tries to answer all of this. He tries to answer why Kedusha Rishonah is Batel and Kedusha Shniah is not. He tries to explain why Kedusha Rishonah is, right? And he says as follows. The Rambam in 8. Kol makom shelo nase b'chol eilu b'chaseder hazeh in kiddush gamur. Anywhere where you don't do this is not fully holy. V'zeh she'asa ezra shtei todo v'zikaron hu she'asa lo b'masav nitkesh makom shelo yesham lo melech v'lo rim v'tumim. And everything Ezra did was only as a commemoration. Because there wasn't a king, there wasn't Urim v'Tumim, but Ben itkadsha b'kedusha rishona shekidsha Shlomo, shehu kidesh azarav Yerushalayim l'sha'atan v'kidshan l'atid lavo. The Beit HaMikdash is not kadosh because of Ezra, it's kadosh because of Shlomo. And that's why you bring l'fichach makrivin hakarbanot kulan. Avo bish ein sham bayit banui, and that's why you're allowed to bring karbanot even without the Beit HaMikdash. Because Kedusha in Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, is forever. V'ochlin kachi kachi m'chol azarava b'shichareva v'enem mukofot v'mechitza. And even without walls, Ochin Kachim Kalim Mazar Shein B'chol Yerushalayim. And this historically was very important because some of the early religious Zionists, with Sigur's Kalisher, and the like, Binyan Sion had a big machloket about what did they want to do? What was the first mitzvah Tluya Baretz that everyone wanted to bring back? Which karban? Karban Pesach. Because karban Pesach can be eaten bituma. Can be eaten bituma if rov of Klal Yisrael is tame. And what does the Rambam say? You don't need a Beit HaMikdash. Right? And then in Halacha Tet Zayin, okay, I'm just going to read it for you, and this is what we're going to have to try to understand tomorrow. V'lama ani omer b'mikdash Yerushalayim k'dusha rishona k'dusha latid lavo, uv'k'dushat shari Yisrael inyan shvid u'masor v'chayot men lo k'dusha latid lavo. Why do I say that Yerushalayim is kadosh, and k'dushat Eretz Yisrael, for the purposes of shvid and maser? So what is he already telling us? That k'dusha latshata, lo k'dusha latshata doesn't mean not kadosh at all. It means not sufficiently kadosh, fully kadosh, for these purposes kadosh. Lefi, shekdushat ha-mikdash v'yushalayim mipnei ha-shechina. Kedushat Yerushalayim depends on the shechina. U'shechina ine betela, and God's presence cannot be nullified. V'arehu omer v'ashimotein mikdashichem, v'amru chachamim afal pi sheshomimin, b'kedushat ha-nein omdin, even though they're desolate, they are holy. But the obligation of Shemitah and Maser Eino Ela Bibnei Kibush Rabin are only because of the conquest of the many. So now, first of all, what is he negating? Kibush Yachid. To explain why Syria is not Kadosh. Right? V'keivan shenilkecha aretz midehem. And therefore, and once the land is taken, batel ha-kibush. Right? Once the, right? If what makes it holy is conquest, and what makes it unholy? Unconquest. Right? Very good. The niftiram and atarami maser to mishvit shareinam in Eretz Israel, and therefore it's exempt from truma and maser and shemitah, because for these purposes it's no longer Israel. For these purposes. V'chevan she'ala Ezra. And when Ezra came v'kidsha, lo kidsha b'kibush. Ezra did not sanctify the land through conquest. Ella bichazaka. He says, remember, I told you the story at the beginning. Was there any conquest? No. They went with a bunch of dregs of society because Cyrus said go. And they went. And what did they do? How did they sanctify the land? They lived in it. That was what they did. Very dramatic. Right? So according to the Rambam, no. According to the Rambam, it's called chazaka. Right, she'echzikuba ulefichach. Therefore, kol makom she'echzikuba olei bavel v'nitkadesh v'kedushat Ezra's shnia. And therefore, anywhere where Ezra went, who mikudash hayom is still holy nowadays. V'af al pishin yilkach aretz mimenu, even though it was taken away from them. V'chayav v'shviru v'maser al derech shabarnu v'chot truma. Therefore, he is obligated in truma and maser. And the last question that we're going to have to answer is the question that everybody asks on the Rambam, which is, well, two questions. Yeah, what is it? Okay, ask it anyways. Is not kadosh for these purposes. Correct, exactly. And that's why if you go to the supermarket, right, one of the things you might see and the million things you'll see on Shemitah is Gvul Ole Mitzrayim. It's Eretz Yisrael of Yehoshua, but not Ezra. You will see that, right? Why does it say that? Because we saw in Chagiga that it's somewhat Eretz Yisrael, but it's the part of Eretz Yisrael that Chazal said Ezra left on purpose so that you could eat from it during Shemitah, and therefore it has a different status for Shemitah. That's why it'll say it. It'll say Gulei LeMitzrayim. It'll say, yeah, that's what it'll say, right? I bought cabbage a few weeks ago. That's what it said. Okay, Gvul Olei Mitzrayim, right? And yes, that's exactly what he's saying. But now we have the last questions that we have needed, and tomorrow we will try to answer these. Okay, what I want you to do, the rest of the Makarot basically is, okay, it's one more Rambam that you should read, right? It's a bunch of attempts by the Achronim to answer it, but I want you to do tomorrow, if you don't read any Achronim, I'm fine with that, right? And we'll do it inside, right? We'll do it in Shir. What I want you to do is try to answer these questions yourself by going back to these sugyot, right, now that we've laid it out. But the last two questions are those that the Kesef Mishnah asks. First of all is, right, he says, two lines down. Eini yodea makoach hazaka gadol mikoach kibush. First question, the Rambam, which is, why is chazaka better than kibush? Why is living better than conquering? And more important question. And Yeshua didn't live in the land? Right? He says, wait a second. First question, why is chazaka better than kibush? Second question, which is even worse. Yeshua conquered the land and lived in the land. So why, even if you have a good svara for why chazaka is better than kibush, good luck finding a good svara for why chazaka by itself is better than chazaka plus kibush. Right? Because Yeshua, right? So let's just read it inside. First of all, why is chazaka better than kibush such that, look, we lived in the land, now we don't, so it's not kadosh. The two, furthermore, originally they conquered it with conquering. They didn't also live there, right? They didn't also dwell in it. Is chazaka with conquering worse somehow? Sorry, is living there without conquering somehow better than conquering and living there? Okay, so the questions, let me just remind you. What are the questions we have to do? Okay? Why is Kedusha Shniyah better? Specifically in the Rambam, why would Chazaka be better? And why would Chazaka be better than Chazaka plus Kibush? Why is Tosfot and the Rambam both hold that there's a machloket about Eretz Yisrael, there's no machloket about Yerushalayim, so why is Yerushalayim better than the rest? Furthermore, what is this Kedusha we speak of? Because it's not complete, because clearly there's some Kedusha left over from Kedushat Yoshua. So what does it mean that this Kedusha is more? In what way is it more? Why does the Gemara care about Kibush Yachid of David, right? That shouldn't matter, because if Kedusha of Yoshua is Batel, then for sure the Kedusha of David is Batel. Okay? So what is the relevance of Kibush Yachid in the context of Syria? Okay? Those are the questions we want to answer to try to get to the heart of Kedushat Haaretz B'Zman Hazeh. I know that's a lot, and this is only a little bit of Makarot. The core, but I said this to Yaakov. I'll end with this for now. Right? Where the core of these Makarot, when did I learn the sugya the first time? So I was, what? Levi. I was Yotam's age. I was in, no, that's not true. It was Shana Aleph. It's not true. It was Shana Aleph. I was in Shana Aleph, right, in Gush, Old City Shabbaton, right? Bednarish gave us a shiur on this. And as I was thinking, okay, what topic should I cover with you guys? I was like, oh, we should cover this topic. And I emailed him and I said, right, Bednarish, you remember 2006-07, right? You gave shiur in the Old City Shabbaton on the nature of Kedushat Haaretz and Kedushat Rishona Shniyah and the Shita Rambam. Can you send me the Makarot? You gave...
Dave, then I added a few.
Don't worry, within a minute he sent it to me, right? Well, of course he did. Of course he did. That's not surprising. But I was like, you know, I was like, my dream is that one day in like 15 years from now, right, one of you is like learning the sugya, and they're like, oh, I remember when we learned this sugya in Shana Aleph. You know, it's possible. Each year it gets longer. Each year the fact that I, you know, that I can still, that I still learn something so often I remember it is like, makes me happier, right? That was, you know, my Shana Aleph. But you know, this is a very fundamental sugya. I learned it then, right? And I figured, well, if I learned it in Shana Aleph, and I'm doing it with my share anyways, right? It's a good topic for you. I added a little bit, and I'll add some things in. But the core of the sugya, right? And I was like, that, you know, as a Rebbe, that's like my goal in life, right? Is that you still remember? I still do it for the Rambam guys. I still do this to Rabbi Ziskind, right? Every time I see, right, he loved it. Every time I see Rabbi Ziskind, I'm like, do you remember? And I always, we have a discussion about the first shiur, week of shiur in ninth grade. He's like,
whatever. It makes him feel good. I mean, I was like, Rizis, do you remember the first week of ninth grade in 2002? Right?
I think he's intimidated by your memory.
I don't know, but he loves the fact that I remember what we learned. I said, do you remember we did the mitzvah of Kiddush? And I told him, I was like, I still remember we did. I remember first week, I was like, we did the Rambam, say, from mitzvah Reish Chavet. Right? We did the Rosh Ksuvot Aleph Yud Bet. We did the Ran. We did the Grizz, right? Like what? We did the Rambam Bingen of Hilchot Ishud, Parak Aleph Halacha Aleph, right? That was the first week.
Was he erratic back then too?
He was right? But like, he, you know, hey, your teachers like the idea that you actually learn something with them. I don't know. I like, you know.
I would assume,
right? I would hope that, and you know, and that's already almost 20 years ago, right? And yeah, but this sugya I do, you know, brings me back, because at least the core of this sugya I learned when I was your age, right? And now I'm teaching it to you, and I'm just older, right? You guys are younger. You were three then, right? Or whatever, what, two, three? What were you? What? 2006, seven, whatever it was. No, that was ninth grade. This sugya I did when it was in Shana Aleph, so 2006, seven, right? So 15 years ago. You were five. So old. Okay. And obviously you were learning that sugya also, right? We were learning it together at the same time. Okay, good. But that's your goal for tomorrow, okay? So like I said, tomorrow the goal is to try to answer these questions. What you have here is, I do want you to try to read through 11, especially the Rishalmi and Shvi'id, since we are learning Shvi'id, right? This is the key for Reb Chaim. If you don't read Reb Chaim inside, it's not the biggest deal, but I gave you several attempted answers for all these issues. By the Acharim, I gave you the Grizz, I gave you Reb Chaim, I gave you Chaim Sha'al, I gave you Tosef Yom Tov, I gave you Chassam Sofer, and I gave you from the Rav in On Repentance. I have the English one in my bag if you want to borrow it, right? So we have five. Okay, so I gave you the page number, it's 308. So I gave you a bunch of different explanations. Again, if we read the Acharim, we don't have to read the Acharim inside, right? I gave it to you so you can look at them, right? But I want you to try to answer these questions and learn something about the nature of Kedusha Aretz, okay? Good job, guys.